What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you're tuned into Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for tuning in again, as always. This week on the show, we have some old favorites. They were my last podcast when we were doing Knock City Live. They were the very last episode of Knock City Live. That video still lives on the internet and is doing really well. It's a cool fucking video. TV Girl is in the house today. It's one dude, TV Girl. It's whimsical. First things first. Follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery at I Am Database, based with two S's, youtube.com/thatskindaneat, where you're going to see Brad and the gang from TV Girl perform Birds Don't Sing. Facebook.com/kindaneat. I'm talking hella fast and none of you guys are going to pay attention to any of this. You can fast forward until you hear the beat if you want to skip straight to the interview. I came unprepared to talk about anything this week, but I do want to plug the fact that I'm going to be performing at the Troubadour for my birthday on July 11th. My birthday is actually on the 8th, but we're performing there on the 11th. Me and Mark are headlining. My friend Speak is going to be supporting us. Cool Roy is going to be supporting us. I would love to see all of your beautiful faces there. Please go to troubadour.com and buy tickets in advance. It'll save you a couple bucks and it'll make me look cooler to them so that maybe they'll let us play there again. I leave to Salt Lake City tomorrow and I'm hoping that I can get to do some fly fishing. That'll be tight. Without any further ado, here is the interview with Brad from TV Girl, a band that I am a big fan of and that I've been listening to ever since we did that Knock City podcast, and you guys should listen to as well. Go to tvgirl.bandcamp.com, pick up their new record that they just released out of the blue called French Exit. It's great. Here's my interview with TV Girl. Guys deal with a lot of janky shit
all the time, dude.
Just kind of like found equipment and stuff.
Yeah, because our setup is pretty different from a lot of, like, I don't know, rock clubs are used to.
Yeah, why? Like, just because there's no guitars and stuff?
Yeah, there's no guitars and drums. It's all dependent on like sounding good through the PA. And
do sound guys get like that are used to rock? Do they get frustrated?
Sometimes they just kind of are not used to it. They're like, you don't have drums, you don't have amps. Like, what?
What is your normal live setup? Is it three samplers or one sampler or two samplers?
We have the Ableton. Everything's going through Ableton. And then,
so you got one guy on a computer.
Yeah, and then we have two keyboards that are running MIDI through Ableton.
Oh, okay.
And then my sampler going, and then like just, you know, a lot of backing tracks and loops on the Ableton, just like blaring.
So you're on a sampler the whole time, and that's the only, or are you on a keyboard too?
I'm on the sampler.
Okay, and then so then the two backing dudes.
Yeah.
Wyatt and Jason are on keyboards, and then Jason's on the computer.
Yeah.
Okay. It's very tech. It's very future.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. And then each of you guys are mic'd.
Yeah. I mean, we used to do the more rock band thing, obviously, when you, on the old.
Yeah. Podcast. Last time we saw you in 2011, you guys had Jason on the drums.
Yeah.
And playing samples on like a MIDI drum pad.
Yeah.
And then
we just decided, I don't know, it was just, I've seen so many people just do the solo. I mean, just getting away from a rock band format is kind of just something I've always wanted to do.
You were on bass last time, yeah, right? And singing backups.
Yeah.
Around that time, that was like the Benny and the Jets EP, and maybe a little bit after that.
Yeah.
You were singing some songs too,
yeah,
right?
I've sang songs on all the releases.
Right.
But yeah, obviously Trung sang a lot of them. But I was writing most of those songs too.
Yeah.
That's part of the reason I think like Trung wasn't really down. The stuff I started writing was a lot more, I don't know, like personal or more like idiosyncratic, and he didn't want to like say those words as if they were him,
right?
Which,
right,
I think really bothered him,
right? Because it was like really, it was the script in your head,
right?
And sometimes it's hard to like
read. And at the beginning, it was more like just writing more of like, I don't know, generic things that anybody could
yeah,
sing,
yeah.
And then I just started writing a lot more of the material and
yeah,
everything, and just more from a more personal standpoint.
So to not go too like postmodern, essentially last time we saw you, the TV Girl, that nom de plume was essentially you and Trung were the writing duo.
Right.
But you guys have parted ways amicably.
Yeah.
And now
still see him all the time.
Yes. Yeah, so, yeah. Good friends, besties. And so now you're like the one doing the writing and the producing.
Yeah. Because I was always writing most of the songs, which is why I don't feel too bad like carrying on the name without him.
Yeah.
Because it's still, from a writing standpoint, very similar. And from the beat making standpoint, which I do all of still, And so it's just,
I actually,
you know,
and on the new record, it still sounds so much like a TV Girl record that I didn't pick up on the fact that Trung wasn't on it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I was touring with announcing that, but I just also just didn't feel like, I don't know. Yeah. Like we're not big enough that people really care.
Right. It'll be like a fucking
not a big news. It's not going to be like featured as news item anywhere.
It'll be like a byline in your Wikipedia page later.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What have you been up to since 2011? That's the last time I saw you.
Well, I don't know. We've just been, you know, doing all the things that normal bands do. We like been playing shows and just trying to figure that out and just writing records and just trying to explore, like, expand the sound. And
do you guys play a lot locally?
Yeah, we play a fair amount. We stopped playing a little while because we had to rejigger the set.
Yeah,
once Trung left. But yeah, we've been playing a lot lately. We're going.
Where do you guys play at?
We played at the Bootleg, and yeah, we played at like Los Globos, and we're playing at Lot One. Is our tour coming up in July with Brother Tiger. We're playing at Lot One, which is like a really, really small place. I don't even know if you're familiar.
I've not heard of it. No.
Yeah. It's just like real. For this tour, I was really interested in just playing like really tiny spots so we could pack them. Cause that's just what
it feels makes, better.
Yeah. It feels good.
It feels
for
better
me.
When you pack a room.
Feels good for the audience. Even like no one wants to be,
there's a different energy. And when it's really packed, you can lose yourself a little more like in the, you know, the audience that can allow themselves to
and
be
it's
a little
also,
freer.
More of a melt. There's not as much, I don't know, pressure to like put on a, I don't want to say like not put on a great performance, but it's a lot looser.
Hell yeah.
At these smaller places.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, being in an audience, like when it's a room that isn't packed, like you feel, as an audience member, you feel like more pressure to just kind of stand there with your arms crossed and like not, you know, reveal too much about your listening habits or something. You
know what I mean? You don't want to like,
you don't want to be the kooky guy on the dance floor.
That's true. Yeah. You don't want to be looking like you're performing to a wildly packed, enthusiastic audience when it's not that. Because that just looks weird.
Totally. Totally.
Because there's really just no way to win. You know, if you're playing to like a, you just got to do the best you can if the audience isn't like feeling it or if there's not that many people there.
Yeah. It's funny, like seeing as many shows as I've been to, like there are some people that can definitely turn it on even if there's only 10 people in the room and they'll perform like they're in a fucking stadium.
Yeah.
I'm somebody where like, if there's only a few people in the room, I'll definitely like make light of the situation. I can't like, I can't, I have to go meta and be like, you know, this is fucking weird for me to play this in front of you guys. Like,
yeah, it is a strange thing.
Yeah, man. So how's the move to LA been? Last I spoke, you guys had just moved into LA.
It's been good, man. I like it up here. I don't have to drive anywhere like that bad, which I feel like that's the worst part of LA.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny when you live in LA, you realize that like there are ways around the traffic.
Right. Because
everyone, first thing, I live in LA. Oh man, the traffic. And I'm like, whatever, dude.
Every once in a while, I will have to like wake up early and drive somewhere in the morning. I'm like, what the hell? How do people do this?
No, totally.
This is
it's
like,
crazy.
I would kill myself.
What part of town do you stay in?
I'm in Los Feliz.
Oh, nice. Is that where you've been the whole time?
Yeah.
So you walk mostly everywhere.
Yeah, and I live right by a subway stop, which is actually pretty nice. Not many people know there's even a subway in LA.
I barely knew that.
You didn't know that?
No, I knew that there was. I've never used it.
Yeah, if you happen to live in the couple of places it runs, it's pretty tight. I mean,
yeah,
it takes me right downtown.
That's sick.
So
they're building. I live in Culver, and they're building like
Oh yeah, they just expanded out there.
Yeah, so now the West Side one takes you to downtown as well. But I've yet to use it. Whenever someone says subway in Los Angeles, I assume they're talking about sandwiches. So, from San Diego.
Yeah,
that's like born and raised.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
What?
So it's like a suburb of San Diego.
Where from?
It's called Scripps Ranch.
Oh, I've not heard of
it.
It's
like north of San Diego proper, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So is it like 20 minutes from downtown.
Oh, okay. So it's not like North County, like not Carlsbad.
Kind of in the middle of like downtown and North County.
Okay, word, man.
What's the difference, yeah.
Yeah, how did you guys end up there in San Diego? Is it generations?
I don't know. I think my dad was in the military.
Marine?
Yeah.
Oh.
And so I think that's why he kind of set up shop there. By the time I was born, he was long out of the military.
Okay, so he wasn't career military.
No, I guess not.
Yeah.
He became a lawyer, I guess, after that.
No shit. So he did he like jump in the military to kind of like get his college funding or whatever?
You know what? I don't know. It's like something I've never really even talked to him about. It's kind of a weird thing to bring up, to be honest.
Why?
Just, I don't know. You don't really know how, I guess, how sensitive some people are, like what kind of traumatic experiences.
Right.
And like when I was a kid, I didn't really understand
yeah
how that like war worked and whatever.
Oh, so was he like in, he was in a war? He was in Vietnam or something?
Yeah.
Oh, Vietnam. No shit. So is your dad a little older?
Yeah, he's older.
Yeah. How, sure. Like how old?
He's
how
probably much older? 70 now.
Oh, no shit. Yeah. So do you have like a wide span of sibling ages or?
I just have an older sister. She lives in LA too. And she's a couple years older than me.
So were you guys products of a second marriage or something? Or he just got a late start?
He had been married one time before. Yeah.
Okay. So do you have half brothers and sisters?
No, they never had kids.
No shit.
And like, that's another weird thing. I never found out about that until I was a little older too.
Like his first wife?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just kind of something that I guess, you know, why would you bring that up to a little kid?
Right. Right.
And, but it's like, you just kind of assume your parents have always been married.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I found out when I was about 15, it was kind of weird, but.
As I get older, like, I feel like the strangest thing about becoming a quote unquote adult is like finding out that your parents aren't infallible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they're such superheroes to you when you're a kid. And then you find out like, oh wait, like you were probably as fucked up as of a 20-year-old as I was. Like, how crazy is that?
Yeah, that is a kind of a, that is an interesting moment. When you start to realize that maybe like when you're hanging out with your friends and you interact with your friends' parents and stuff, and you start to realize like these people aren't like necessarily like that much smarter than me or like anything, like
don't
have their lives in like the best control. That's like a very like moment that's very like separates.
Yeah. And the other craziest shit is like seeing how, you know, we're in that age group where like people are getting pregnant or becoming or doing whatever.
Yeah.
And like, you know, ending up married and stuff. And I've seen so many like marriages and pregnancies start under like kind of suspect circumstances where I'm like, wait, I bet like a lot of our parents went through this same shit. Like,
definitely.
Who's the dad? And like, okay, I'm going to pick the dad. Like, fuck. It's so crazy.
Yeah. This is weird. And it's like, if you don't have a really kind of, I don't know, open conversation with your parents, like, yeah. I don't know, you might never find out the real circumstances.
No, totally.
Especially like, it's really awkward to even kind of bring up that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's like, I've my dad is sick, and this is not to make the conversation about me, so, but he's like got Alzheimer's, right? And so mm-hmm. like I've been trying to like, I don't really have a chance to kind of document his life, so I've like made it a purpose to like bring my mom on the podcast and get family history and shit. Is your dad still in good health?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
like I've really been interested in kind of, my sister, she's really good at drawing.
Yeah.
I really wanted to kind of maybe, I don't know, just for fun, do like a document. Cause my parents have so many good stories they've told us over the years. And I'm like, that would just suck if like these stories like eventually were lost to time or something.
Right.
I would want to document them in some way. Like
totally.
In a graphic novel or something like that.
Oh, that would be sick.
Just for like, I don't know, for fun.
Yeah. That'd be tight. So
just to learn the family history and document it. Just,
right.
I don't know. Cause it's important to my experience, I guess.
So is he just kind of a quiet stoic dude? Is that what it is?
Like
Much, the fucking leftover Marine mentality probably.
Yeah. You know I don't know. He's funny and everything. Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It's not.
So it wasn't like,
I definitely don't have the most like open, I don't know, like other families are way more, not closer, but just a lot more, I guess.
Loving?
No,
affectionate?
No.
Okay.
Nothing like that. I don't know. Some people just have different, I don't know, people have different relationships with their parents.
Yeah, yeah. No, my dad's a military dude too, and he's like not the most affectionate dude.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah.
In my case too.
You know what I'm saying? So are mom and dad the same age?
My dad's like probably 8 years older.
Word. So he ended up becoming a lawyer. What did your mom do? How did they meet?
They met on a cruise ship, actually. It's actually a pretty funny story. This is one of the stories I definitely wanted to document. My dad was just, I think he had been recently divorced from his first wife.
Yeah.
He was on a cruise ship just going up to Alaska just to sightsee and just take a vacation.
Swag.
And my mom's family were on like a family trip.
Mm.
And I guess my mom, there was like some dinner ballroom dancing thing, and my mom saw my dad and thought he was cute or whatever.
Mm.
And she said something to my uncle, her brother, mm-hmm. and my uncle's kind of crazy and he's kind of kooky.
Mm-hmm.
And he like went up to my dad and was like, hey, I'll give you $5 if you like ask my sister to dance, like she'll really get a kick out of it.
No shit.
And so, yeah. And then they like, you know, they like fell for each other on that vacation. And like,
and the other
funny part is that my mom had been dating at that time this kind of loser guy. Apparently this is how the story goes. This guy named Tony Abalone.
He was an abalone
fisherman, and he was just kind of like a hippie or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Just kind of a weirdo. And then he was waiting for my mom when they got off the cruise, and like my uncle had spotted him, and he had to go down and like break the news that like they're broken up.
Yeah, that's funny.
And he's just like kind of like walked away with flowers, like dragging behind him.
Oh shit, that's definitely like. Yeah.
So what happened to Tony Abalone? I don't know.
See that as the last picture in the graphic novel.
Like, that's
Tony's fucking flowers falling on the floor.
Yeah.
shout out to Tony Abalone. I'm so sorry for you. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't realize that like your parents went on to become the basis of the movie Titanic. That is a beautiful thing. Yep. So, was she from San Diego as well?
She's from Pasadena.
Oh, from Pasadena.
Yeah.
And so she moved down to San Diego to be with him, or was he around the Pasadena area as well? Like what happened?
My mom lived in Marin County.
Yeah.
Up in the Bay Area.
Right.
And they were long distance for a year or something.
Yeah.
And then she eventually moved down cause my dad had a job or whatever.
Yeah. What was her life goals? What was she doing?
She was pretty interesting. She had a pretty interesting job. She worked at one of the first computer stores.
Yeah.
In the Bay Area, like when computers were really primitive and no one really knew what to do with them.
Selling Apple IIe's and shit like that?
Or I don't even know. I think it was before Apple. I think it was like Omega or something. It was like, yeah, it's funny talking to her about that job because it was like computers at that time were just like, you know, everyone was like, what the hell?
Right.
I'll never need one of these. What the hell would I ever use this for?
Right.
And her part of her job was convincing people like, you know, what to do with them.
Yeah.
And they couldn't do much back then. So one of her things that she would try to sell people is like, you can store all your recipes in the computer. Like you don't need to write them down anymore. Like they'll all be in the computer and people are just like, whatever. Like that's ridiculous.
That's crazy.
But apparently there was just one guy who was like kind of her best benefactor. Cause he would come in and just get like he was like a total gearhead of those early computers and would come in and just buy like whatever new thing he had. My mom thought maybe he was like a drug dealer or something.
Right.
Because he just had a lot of money and just like was really interested in like keeping records. And
right. Oh, that's interesting. It went on to be Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
No, exactly. That's crazy, dude. She was an early adopter on that shit.
Yeah.
So she moves down to be with your dad in San Diego and they start working on a family.
Yep. Yeah. So the story goes.
Yeah, that's great. And so what's Scripps Ranch like growing up there?
It's just like, I guess it's a pretty wealthy like suburb.
Like gated community type shit?
There are gated communities there. I didn't live in a gated community, but a lot of my friends did.
What kind of law did your dad get into?
I think it's like labor law, like labor disputes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess he's a pretty good guy.
That's tight. Like he's fighting for the good guys rather than...
Right. Scripps Ranch, I guess, is pretty... It's one claim to fame is that in the big like fires in Southern California, it was like one of the heaviest hit.
Ooh. So did you have to always worry about that during the dry season?
I mean, I didn't worry about it, but
yeah,
somebody probably should have.
Yeah. What was elementary school like for you? Like, were you around kids that you enjoyed? I don't know.
What a good question.
Yeah.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, sure.
Yeah.
Who wasn't?
It was normal. I mean, fuck, I don't know. Some kids hated elementary school. They were
loners.
Did you
hate elementary school?
No, I was down. I was like fucking, you know, I was a popular kid. I liked it. I was down. The girls chased me on the playground.
Ah, that's good. Yeah. That wasn't really my experience. I was sort of the class clown, I guess, or I wanted to be a comedian when I was younger. Yeah, like when I was in fifth grade, I remember they had a presentation of what you wanted to be when you grew up, and I wanted to be a comedian back then.
Nice.
Like,
you're still pretty funny on Twitter, I think.
Oh, thanks.
Every once in a while, you say
funny
shit.
When I'm not going on a rant or
something. Yeah, about the music industry.
Man, Twitter is just so, I don't know, man. I have such mixed feelings about it.
Who were your comedians back then?
Back then, I don't know. I liked, you know, the Ernest movies and I watched The Simpsons religiously. I don't know if I followed like comedians.
Yeah.
The kids in the hall, I would come home and watch.
Did you like Saturday Night Live?
Oh, yeah. Like the reruns on Comedy Central. I would come home and watch two episodes of Kids in the Hall because they would start at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
Until 3. And then there'd be 2 Saturday Night Lives after that and I'd watch them all.
What cast of Saturday Night Live was it?
It was like Adam Sandler, David Spade, Norm MacDonald.
That was the one that I got into. That was like the cast that got me into it.
Yeah, I wonder
if
that was like the best cast ever or it's just the one I like.
I always wonder that too.
Nostalgically relate to.
Exactly. Because I'm always like, oh, you know, like NBA was the best when I was a kid. And I'm like, oh, Saturday Night Live was the best when I was a kid. And then I'm like, wait, like I was just a kid. Like, and that everything seemed awesome because you're just discovering it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I've never really gone back and like delved.
I've gone back and watched it. Saturday Night Live, it's really good, actually.
But I've never gone back and delved into like the 70s, you know, early 80s ones or anything before it. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. Who knows if it's the best or not. But yeah, that was a great fucking time. So like, did you have jokes when you were in fifth grade? Did you work on an act?
No, not really. I like eventually did stand up later. In college? Yeah. For a little bit.
How did that go?
Horribly.
Why?
That is the most brutal thing. Have you ever tried doing it?
I've not tried it. And, I've seen some friends do it and it's a varying degrees of success.
It's like, it's interesting comparing it to music because when you're doing stand up and you're telling a joke, it's like the failure is so evident immediately.
Right.
Whereas in music,
it's still
if
covered
you suck
by...
you'll perform a song and people still clap and they'll just sit there politely.
Yeah.
And so like you don't really know, I guess, whether you've succeeded wildly or at least you don't know if you failed miserably with the joke. You say something and if that laughter's not there, it's like
a vacuum.
Everyone
in the room
is just uncomfortable.
Yeah. So fucking
I did it a couple times. I couldn't hack it. It's so cutthroat too, so competitive.
Yeah.
Even at the lowest of levels, I like would go and not get on, and it was so clicky, like people would make fun of me and
no shit.
Yeah, it was pretty. I hated it, man.
It was a club down in San Diego, or what?
No, this is when I went up to college. And
where'd you go?
I went to Davis, and I would do stand up in Davis and Sacramento and like Vacaville. Yeah, sometimes.
Was it? what was your styling? Were you like trying to be kind of alt, or was it, like pretty?
I was definitely trying to be alt, like one-liners and like just weird stuff. Like it didn't go over well. It wasn't the right, like, because all my favorite comedians like do that kind of like anti-comedy or like
how all like Brett Weinbach type thing.
It was more like, who could I compare it to? Like a bad Mitch Hedberg or
something
like that. Like absurd.
Yeah.
Like whimsy. Purposefully not funny things sometimes. Supposed to be funny.
Wow.
Then you realize like people, I'm in such a bubble. Like most comedy is pretty much like, you know,
yeah,
talking about your parents and doing impressions and stuff.
Right. That's so funny that, I've always thought that the comedy hustle seems a lot like the indie rap hustle because it is pretty apparent when people don't like you as an indie rapper.
Oh yeah. You think so?
I bet,
it does seem like rap is a little more.
Well, and you don't have a fucking support system when you're the only guy on stage too. Like with a band, it's like, there's probably at least one guy in a band who's going like, hey man, that was pretty fucking cool. Like that was a good show. Even if it's shitty. Yeah. Whereas like, you just really feel shitty if you're the only guy on stage and it's like apparent that like,
especially with
no
comedy, you know, when I would go to open mics, the only other people in the audience would be other comedians waiting to go on. So they wouldn't laugh at you. They don't care.
Yeah.
Some people would just listen, put their iPods in and like work on their jokes waiting to go on. It's like completely ridiculous.
Yeah. So does the comedy bug ever strike you anymore? Or is that completely out of your system?
Man, sometimes I wonder, but no, I think it's too hard.
Yeah.
How many things can you really focus on? Like, I don't know. I don't do enough with music even. So.
Right. You don't want to put too, like, I don't know. Spread yourself thin.
Yeah. To like try to get good at comedy would be such a hard thing. I wonder, though, I mean, I sometimes think like if you're like a talented artist, like I bet someone who's like a really good rapper, if they like gave that up and tried to do comedy or something, they could figure it out. Cause a lot of it is just,
it's stage presence.
It's figuring it out and like studying it.
Yeah, totally.
And some people are like not really naturally gifted and they just have it right away. But I think, feel like most people just who get good at something, just work really hard at it and kind of study it and stick with it.
Yeah, yeah. My friend Jonathan, this dude, Dumbfound, I think you met him.
Yeah.
So he switched over into doing some comedy for a little bit. Yeah, he was pretty good. He's funny. I mean, like, he's like natural.
Did he go by Dumbfounded?
He would go.
He changed his name, didn't he?
Yeah, now he's Parker. Yeah. I don't remember. Like, I actually saw him at the Laugh Factory once. Like, he had a kind of a fucking jump start because he had when you got 100,000 Twitter followers, like, people are like.
So his fans of rap would come see him?
Yeah. Or, well, like, I think it just helped him, like, get on bigger stages. You know what I mean? Because it's like, you know, if he tweets it out that I'm going to be at the Laugh Factory, like, people will come. Huh. And so, but yeah, he was pretty funny.
Like, and it wasn't like hip hop related comedy or anything?
Some of it. A lot of it was Korean humor, like Korean jokes. Yeah. You know what I mean? But yeah, he was.
You went and saw him?
I saw him once. Yeah, it was funny. I was clowning. I remembered one joke that he said about like, yeah, you know, we won't, you know, we're modern Koreans. Like, we won't follow you around our store anymore. We'll just follow you on Twitter or something. And I thought that was pretty funny. So anyway.
I'm laughing.
Yeah, it's good, right? But yeah, so I think there is like something to be said for like, if you have that stage presence, you've already put in some time like doing rap shit. I feel like it would
especially,
cross
yeah,
over
there's
easier.
A lot of rappers that, I mean, it's funny just by its very nature.
Yeah. Like, our buddy Wax is trying to do comedy stuff now too. And it's like, that's the thing is if you do crowd work between your songs, you're already halfway there.
Or writing a good punchline in a rap is probably the similar.
Same feeling.
Super similar to writing.
Yeah. Joke. Yeah. Did you stay a class clown all the way through high school?
No, I kind of like got into sports and
what were
music.
You playing?
I played water polo and swim team.
No shit.
Yeah.
That seems like the most difficult sport.
I think it is.
Yeah. That seems very
hard. I wasn't very good at water polo. I could swim really fast. That's like what I got good at.
Yeah.
But I couldn't score goals like for shit at all.
Is it like a combination of you have to have a good arm and be able to swim good or something?
I think you have to like have big hands and like yeah, have a strong upper body and shit. And
is it true that water polo players grow their toenails out to like scratch each other under the water and
shit? Nah, you have to get your, there's a referee who checks your toenails and nails to make sure they're not sharp.
No shit.
Yeah, before
know.
Every game.
Oh, no kidding.
But people, I mean, that was my favorite thing to do, just like grab people's feet underwater and like pull them back. Cause you get away with a lot of shit.
Yeah.
And people would get really mad at you, but you're just like, whatever, man. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Ref didn't see it. Like, it's all good.
Right.
If people get angry at you, it's good because then they're more liable to like foul you and stuff. Yeah, so that was kind of like, I had a really dirty game actually.
That's tight. You're like the Reggie Miller of water polo.
I was like, I can't score goals. What can I do? I can just like, I can definitely make people mad at me. That's
there you
pretty
go.
Easy for me to do.
Get in their head. Yeah. Did you, were you a good student?
Yeah, I was all right, I guess.
Yeah. You seem pretty smart. That's why I ask. Like you have this kind of, fucking disenchanted, like smart guy thing going on.
Oh no.
Yeah,
I guess. I don't know. I don't know. I was really into reading and stuff, but I wasn't good at, I don't know. I didn't get that good of grades or anything.
So you were kind of like educating yourself in your own time.
Yeah.
Like,
time? To this day, I feel like that's the way to go. I feel like if you're smart, I feel like people are born smart and not smart way more than people want to give it credit for.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Like, it sort of like looks in a way, like, I feel like, you know, you're born, some people are born really good looking, some not so much, and some people are just naturally smart.
You got blessed with everything, bro.
Oh,
fucking
dude,
handsome
you.
Bastard. But so you, like, you're a lifelong learner is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I fucking was a voracious reader.
Yeah, who were your authors? What did you like to read?
In high school, I was way into Kerouac, like lots of young boys are.
Absolutely.
The Martian Chronicles was like my favorite book. I had a teacher assigned, I had a really good teacher who assigned like really hip books.
Yeah.
Like Vonnegut and Thomas Pynchon.
I was going to say, you probably went through a Vonnegut phase.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, same.
And still probably Cat's Cradle is one of my favorite books. I think I'm going to get a Cat's Cradle tattoo.
Really?
Been flirting with it.
The one that got me into it, Cat's Cradle is the one that's like So It Goes? Which one is Cat's Cradle? I read so many of them, I forget. Is that the one with the ice, something ice?
Yeah, Ice Nine.
Oh, yeah, Ice Nine, there you go.
Yeah.
The one that got me into Vonnegut was...
Slaughterhouse Five?
No, we never got assigned to read that. Breakfast the Champions.
Oh, right, yeah. I read that in high school.
Yeah, a fucking teacher gave it to me as a graduation present. My English teacher gave it that book as a graduation present and said, his writing... I think you'll like it because your writing reminds me of how he writes.
Yeah.
And like within the first five pages of Breakfast of Champion, there's a doodle of how he would draw an asshole.
Yeah.
And it's just an asterisk.
Yeah. I have a friend who got that on her foot.
That's funny.
An asshole.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm going to love this. I'm going to love this book.
Yeah, so, man. Having a good teacher who's like hip to that stuff is like pretty essential. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Man, I should go back and say what's up to Mr. Boyd. Shout out
to Mr. Boyd. Yeah. That's how I feel about my English teacher, Ms. Lund. She was super tight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. So you're reading a lot and educating yourself, but maybe not paying attention to school so much. But wait, but you got into Davis. Davis is pretty good school, isn't it?
I guess. I don't know. I don't think it's...
What'd you major in?
In English.
Oh.
And something called technocultural studies, which I think only exists at Davis and might not even exist
anymore. Say that word again.
Technocultural studies.
Technocultural studies.
Yeah.
What's that?
It was like sort of like sociology, but like with like how technology affects...
Oh, so it's not an EDM
art or how people major. Interact. No, yeah. It's not an EDM thing. Although I bet there's a lot of EDM fans actually.
I bet
in that major.
Yeah, yeah. Did you start playing music in high school? Were you in band?
Yeah, I was in bands in high school.
In bands or in band class?
Oh, not band class. I started my own bands.
What kind of bands?
They were just like, I don't know, like garage band. Like they were trying to be really fun. They were like sort of really cute and funny.
Yeah.
Like I would write songs about Back to the Future and stuff. And
what
like
was influencing you? Like, I feel like, I always tell people when I'm describing, what TV Girl sounds like, I say it's like Jens Lankman. Yeah, there you go. And like maybe Elvis Costello and the Beach Boys.
Yeah. I mean, I love all those.
Yeah. Like, did you pick up on those guys? I mean, did you pick up on like Beach Boys stuff or like Elvis Costello early?
Let's see. What was that? I mean, I was a huge, the first band that I like became obsessed with really was the Velvet Underground.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Lou Reed. And so, I mean, to this day is like still my favorite stuff in the world.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, my sister would listen to really cool music. Like she would drive me to school.
How much older is she?
She's 3 years older than me. So she was a senior when I was a freshman. So for a whole year, she would drive me in the morning.
Yeah.
And just listen to cool music, like Sub Pop bands, like the Thermals and like the Microphones.
Nice.
And so that's probably like my first taste of like good music. And then like I had a friend, this guy, Jake, who was really into cool music, and he gave me this book called Our Band Could Be Your Life. And that's a really good book because it's just about the 80s, like, underground scene. And there's, it chronicles like 11 bands. And so I like read that book and like listened to all those bands, and you listen to all those bands, and then they introduce you to a world of like a bunch of new bands. I just became like obsessed with listening to old music. Basically.
So, yeah. So not only are you kind of educating yourself, like in picking your own literature, but then you're like creating this kind of tree branch of like musical influence as well, because you'll find out about one thing and you're the type of person that will also like, oh, okay, I like this band. Who influenced them?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like I do that all day. Like, a lot of, a really good resource I use is like, I go on allmusic.com and they have this, this like before Spotify does this now also, but just like you go on a band you like and it has related artists and it has like a list of 20 artists and they're all, you know, someone with a cool name.
Yeah.
You look and I basically, I have a rule. It's like, I go and look at, they rate records up to 5 stars. And like, if they have a 5-star record, like I'll download it immediately. If I can just listen to it, no matter what it, what genre or whoever it is. Like, and that's like, you know, I feel like that's a really good way to study like the great.
Yeah, because I feel like you have pretty broad tastes. Because I know, like, you're also, like, beyond knowing a lot about indie rock and various, like, you know, rock bands, like, you're also into rap music.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
when did you get into rap music?
Man, I don't know. Like, when I went to college, I guess I started listening to, like, the Beastie Boys and shit. And then I just, you know, Jay-Z and Nas. And then, like, you know, that opens the floodgates to so many other cool artists. And I actually tried to rap for a little bit. I did rap in college, like.
You dabbled in all of the fucking failed white guy arts, comedy, fucking rap. What else?
My rap career was pretty miserable. I played shows in Davis and they were pretty bad.
Really? How many shows did you play as a rap? What was your rap name?
It was The Son of Sam.
Fuck yeah, dude. Super rap.
There probably is like a real rapper, I bet, named that. It's a pretty good name.
That's funny.
I don't know. I played a show with Verbs. I saw you're friends with him, huh?
Yeah, we did an EP together.
Yeah, he lived in Sacramento.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He was up there all the time. So he was sort of like, actually like kickstarted a bunch of rap shows. I played a show with him once and.
Really?
He has probably no recollection.
Was he wearing his red hat back then?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, dude. Verbs is actually
a real like in the scene.
He knows everybody.
Supporter. Yeah. I went to a Heavy Hawaii show. It's like a indie, like unknown, basically one of my friend's bands he's in. And
yeah.
He was just, Verbs was like running the sound or something.
Yeah. Verbs does a little bit of everything. Yeah. He's everywhere. And then also he's really up on shit too. And Verbs is like, been somebody who's always been part of my brain trust that like tells me like, oh dude, you got to check out so-and-so.
Word. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Yeah. Verbs is a good guy. That's really crazy.
And there's this guy, Random Abilities. You ever heard of him?
No, I haven't.
He's like a Sacramento hometown hero.
Yeah.
Rapper. And he was like always performing, and I think I played a show with him and stuff.
I once got my only time I've ever been in Sacramento, I got a public urination ticket.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, come on, man.
$211.
What were you doing, playing a show up there?
The most expensive piss ever. No, I was filming a music video that never came out. And,
why didn't it come out?
It just didn't come out good. I mean, I don't want to like throw anybody under the bus. I just didn't like the way it came out. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I thought it was a bad look, so we didn't put it out. But yeah, afterwards I got fucked up. It was when Four Locos were like pretty new and like they hadn't changed their formula yet. And I drank like 2 or 3 of them and then some other shit and was just out wilding. And I was like, dude, I have to piss so bad. My friend, this dude that I had met, he was like, oh, there's an alley back here. You can go piss back there. Like it's chill. And they had like a sting set up where they were just fucking busting people in this alley. Like they were,
really?
Dude, they busted us both for pissing. And it seems like they were just parked there like giving out tickets.
They were parked in a car. The cops were just like behind a dumpster back there.
No, they were like chilling in unmarked cars. The two sets of cars.
Man, that's sneaky. Huh?
Right? Oh, man, it must have been a very popular alley.
Did they do that out there, though? I've known tons of friends up there who got public urination tickets.
Yeah.
Revenue stream.
Yeah, the dude was basically like, well, you can either pay it and like not worry about it, or like, you know, if you don't think you're going to be back to Sacramento, you can not pay it, but you're going to have a warrant up here next time you come. And I was like, oh, I'll just pay it. Fuck
yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, don't piss in Sacramento. Yeah. So you were kind of all over the place in college, the comedy and the rapping and.
Yeah.
You were just kind of coming into your own as an artist or what?
I guess so. Yeah. I was just doing a lot of different stuff and then I started making beats. I was in a rap cover band. That was pretty fun.
How does that work?
It was sick. We did like a full Nas cover set of Illmatic. We played like half of Illmatic.
Yeah.
And like me and four buddies just like got a band together and did it. And then we did like the next year we did like just a full cover set of like rap songs and we played at parties and stuff. And then I started making beats and yeah, I mean, I got kind of really into that.
Yeah.
And I was like, my goal was just like to make beats and send them to people. And I like sent them to people, but they were probably so horrible and I'm sure no one ever cared or listened to them. But, and then meanwhile, I was back in San Diego. When I would go home on vacations, I'd play in bands with like Trung and my friends, other friends down there.
Right. Okay. So yeah, was Trung in like some of your early high school bands, the ones that were playing?
Yeah, we were in a band called the Whale Tales.
Okay.
It was all sea themed. I'm not kidding.
Yeah. Cause you said you were trying to write like cutesy stuff, right?
Yeah. It was pretty cutesy. It was all lots of fish puns.
Yeah.
The name of the album was Why You So Blue Whale.
Oh, geez.
Man,
that's very
track that down, that rarity. And then we had a band called the Movers and the Shakers, and that kind of became like TV Girl eventually.
Okay. And so you were playing bass the whole time?
Yeah, I was playing bass. And
did you pick up a guitar originally?
Yeah, that was my first instrument.
What age was that?
That was when I was probably around 14.
Yeah. 15. You just told your dad like, hey, I want a guitar or what?
I think I had one of my good friends at the time was like starting to play guitar and I just wanted to copy him.
Yeah.
And so I bought a guitar off him and then started taking lessons from just this high school kid down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget his name, but he was pretty awesome actually. Cause like he wasn't like a music teacher proper. He was just like a kid who was like in bands.
Yeah.
And he was pretty good at guitar, but he didn't really teach us how to, it was me and my friend. We took lessons together and he's like, I'm not going to teach you how to play. I'm going to teach you how to like be in a band.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he taught us like how to write songs, not like how to play scales.
Oh, that's tight.
And that was kind of like, when I look back now, I kind of think like that was like a big like advantage that I had over other people. Cause like I learned how to write songs, not how to play guitar.
Right. So you, and that's probably good because you weren't thinking about like the technicality of the music you were making. It was more just like, does this sound like a song?
Yeah. Like here's, you know, someone just telling you like it takes, you don't really, you listen to music your whole life, but you don't really realize that a song is like an intro, a verse, chorus, verse, chorus,
bridge, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Like,
and some people who learn the technical abilities, like, you know, they always say like, oh, a lot of people that become, prodigies on the violin or whatever, they end up never writing their own music or becoming like prolific artists. They get good at mastering and mimicking and playing anything.
Yeah. I think that's really true.
But they don't create their own music.
I wonder if that's just certain people gravitate. If you really gravitate towards something really technical, you're not inclined to be creative. Because being really mastering something technically is like kind of, I don't know, being creative, it's so messy and so a lot of times you don't know what you're doing and it takes a sort of like riskiness.
And sometimes the beauty is in mistakes.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And then you have some people, I don't know, like, I'm really fascinated with someone like, I don't know, like Eminem or something. Who's like technically probably one of the best rappers of all time,
but it's like unlistenable now.
Yeah. But back in the day he could also like write a song. And that's kind of what made him so amazing at the time.
Right. Right. Yeah. He could write like a catchy hook with very technical verses.
And like no one could fuck with him. Like technically, like you couldn't say he was a bad rapper.
Right.
Even
and now
if he didn't like his music.
Yeah, totally. And now, but now as he's progressed, I feel like he's concentrating so much on technicality trying to like live inside the beat rather than like, you know, make a good song.
It is. His new album was kind of, do you listen to it?
Man,
I listened to some of it and I was like, you can tell it's like, it's still such a pleasure to listen to him like rhyme.
Yeah.
But the songs are pretty bad.
I've actually not even been a fan of like his rapping abilities.
Oh, really?
For like the last probably the whole last full album I listened to of his was the Marshall Mathers LP. I'm like total snobby about that shit. But anyway, so then when you're in college and you start making beats, you would go back to San Diego and
form bands like over the summer.
Yeah.
And do an album. Like every summer we just come home and do a new album.
Right.
And just release it to no one, you know?
Yeah, like, well, how many songs? Like you would do 10 songs, 12 songs?
Yeah, 10 songs and just
in a summer.
Yeah.
That's pretty fucking, that's a lot of music.
Yeah, it's pretty, I mean, it's pretty fun. Like.
And were you playing, was it a combo of sample-based stuff and instruments?
No, back then it was sort of like sounding like the Beatles or something like really guitar rock thing. And then I think like the summer right after I graduated college, like I came home and didn't know what to do or I don't know. Was just kind of hanging around. We were going to do another band. And then I like sent Trung some of these beats that I was doing. And we just like wrote songs to these beats. And like, that was in like a weekend.
And did you feel like, oh, maybe we're onto something?
I don't know. We were just like, you know, that was like kind of in the glory days of like music blogs.
Yeah.
And we'd had some friends who had just like out of nowhere, like blown up.
So what, like 09? Yeah. 08, 09.
09, 010.
Yeah.
It's kind of maybe the tail end of it. But like, I don't know, like we'd seen these guys, Colts, who were like San Diego.
Oh, the Colts are from San Diego?
Yeah.
Colts are from San Diego.
And they, I didn't really know them, but like we had run in similar circles or had mutual friends, and like overnight they just like
they're huge,
blew up because of music blogs, and we were just like, man, we should just try that.
Yeah.
For the first time, we sat down and we were like, what are 50 like music blogs that like feature artists we like, and got their emails and just emailed 50 of them. And
see, that's very man, that's smart. That like, I mean, dude, fucking so many people always ask like, oh, how do you do it? How do you do this? How do you do that? And I like the fact that you guys just went like, that's basically the real life equivalent of saying like, I'm gonna Google it. You know what I mean? Like, let's make a list and let's fucking figure out how to contact them all.
Yeah. And back then it was easy. I mean, it's similar to some degree today, but back then it's like people were super stoked to.
Yeah. The contacts were on the website.
They were on the website. Super responsive, and it was, you know, it was awkward back then. Like it was just cold calling people was always awkward, but just saying like, we were like, you know, it kind of sounded like a mixture between Animal Collective and like, I don't know, just put a bunch of bands we liked.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
I'm sure they read that and like, oh God, like listen to, but people will listen to it. And
yeah. Cause you guys had fucking posts on Pitchfork, like pretty much immediately.
Yeah. Like a week. It was crazy. The week after we put that first EP, it was like on Pitchfork, and that was a pretty crazy moment.
Yeah, that's wild.
It was like crazy to see that plan work so like fantastically.
Right.
It was just lucky though. I was like back and now I do the same thing. I like reach out and you know it doesn't
work.
It doesn't blow up in the same way that it just.
Yeah.
I feel like that's just a once in a lifetime thing.
Yeah, so many people like picked up on what you guys picked up on. I think you know what I mean. I mean, back in 09, like you're saying, the glory days of the blogs, like I would get all these fucking Two Dope Boys posts and this, that, and the other. And people would like congratulate me actually, like, dude, I saw your post on Two Dope Boys. Congratulations. Yeah. Like that was a thing, you know?
Yeah.
And now like those who won't even respond to me. If, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just a different fucking
it's
era.
A different game.
It's a different game now. You got to have PR and all that stuff. Yeah. It seems like. How were you guys doing drums in the bands before you were using samples? Did you guys have a live drummer? Drums are hella hard to mic, aren't they?
We had this friend Wes who's kind of like in the early days was like our third TV Girl member, and he mixed and mastered all those first two EPs.
Yeah.
And like he lived in San Francisco at the time, and we'd send him all the stuff, and he'd, cause he was really into like music production. And at one point we're like, Wes, you gotta like come down and be in the band. And he's like, nah. But that's cool. Like he just helped us make those, cause we had no idea about, at the time I didn't have any idea of like mixing and mastering.
Yeah. Well, your process for making beats, I think your beats are interesting. Cause it's funny to me that you say, oh, I wanted to start making beats to like send them to people. Cause I couldn't really see like rappers using your beats at this point. Like some of your songs make me want to be like, oh, I would like to rap over this because like the singing and the way it works with the beat is so fucking tight that it would be dope to have a rap verse on it.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know if I would ever pick out any of your beats to just rap on. Cause they do sound like pop.
Right.
They,
yeah. The ones that I make now for like the band are not like back in the early days. I mean,
you're trying to make bangers.
I was trying to make banging beats and I would rap over my own beats sometimes. So.
Yeah.
But it would be sick to like do that again. I should.
What was your rap subject matter?
I was like, at the time, Das Racist had just come out.
Oh,
and,
right.
Like I was like obsessed with him. So it was like super like absurdist.
Yeah.
Just nonsense, like cool rhyming words that sounded cool together. It was complete, like abstract,
whimsy. Yeah, that's cool. That's funny. Then you ended up on Greedhead for a record.
Yeah,
how stoked were you about that? Then
it was tight, man. I just saw because I was following Himanshu's blog, and I just at that time, man, like our song was just getting like everywhere, and he had featured it on his blog, personal blog. If you want it,
okay.
And so I was just like, all right, like I hit him up and was like, hey man, like I saw you feature a song, like
big fan.
Yeah. I think I tried to send him beats even.
Oh really?
And he obviously like didn't go for it, but yeah, he just hit me back and was like, hey man, I love you guys. Like, let me know if you ever want to do anything together, whatever.
That's tight.
Yeah.
How does a deal like that work out? Like in, was it just a digital release?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like, it was pretty much just a co-sign, to be honest. I was like,
right.
They didn't, and we just released it ourselves like we always did. And he like tweeted about it and stuff.
Yeah.
Which helped.
That's so funny.
He didn't like, you know, really
there's
do
no funding
as
and
far
shit
as like
that.
Funding or like yeah. advising or anything like
That's
that.
That's a funny thing about like labels nowadays, or like, you know, the quote unquote yeah. indie label, like fucking, I've always had people be like, oh, how'd you put out this record with such and such and do this and that? And it's like, oh, I just put it out myself and put their picture on the back of the album. Like,
yeah, that's what, for our third EP, Lonely Women, we were going to release it through this small indie label just because we thought like, well, it's time to like put, let's try doing it through a label. Yeah. So we'd always put it out ourselves.
Right.
And it got down to like talking to him and I was like, wait, what exactly, like, what are you even going to do? Like,
right.
He's like, well, I'm just going to put it on iTunes and like. I was like, that's it? Like, yeah. I could do that.
Yeah, totally.
And like, I wouldn't have to give you any money to do that.
Right. And yeah, I think the main benefit maybe in a group situation, if somebody else puts it on iTunes for you, is that maybe they have like somebody that will split the checks so that you don't, so you know, like there's somebody giving you the fair amounts of money and you don't have to argue within the band about it. And
that's although you don't really know what they're doing on the back end.
Right. Totally. Yeah. It's all very strange. It's a strange wild west out there of digital music.
It is. It is crazy. I don't know.
Yeah. So this new one, you guys just put it out. You guys pulled a Beyonce.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. I don't know. For a brief moment, we had like a manager who was like pretty well connected and stuff. And we were trying to pitch it around to labels and stuff. And I don't know. It just didn't really take. So we were just like, what are we going to do with it? We could just go through the normal thing, the press cycle that we had done before, like pitch it for premieres and like do the album stream and all that stuff. But I was like, I don't know, to me in this day and age, like I just hate that as an audience member, as a listener.
Same.
I don't like it. Like if I hear a song, a single that I like, I'm just like, I wish I could hear the whole album. Like right. I know it's done.
Right. Exactly.
What are they doing? Like they're just teasing on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
It feels so weird.
Yeah.
And they just want to extend that conversation. But I don't know. Like, well, I can see why it works, sort of.
And as an audience member, it's weird to watch it, but also as an artist, it sucks trying to like, that fucking doll keeps scaring the shit out of me. The mannequin. I just looked back and like got a literal chill. There's a mannequin standing in the hallway that they brought up. Sorry.
It's true.
As an artist, it's like weird as well, because when you try to premiere with a site, they're like, okay, yeah, you can premiere your video on our site, but you have to list it private on YouTube, and then right. and for the first 24 hours no one else is allowed to post about it. And it's like, oh, okay, cool, so you're trying to make me, who doesn't have as big a following as you, shoot myself in the foot and like make this video not get as many views because people can't search for it on YouTube,
right?
Like they can only find it on Twitter, and then like you're trying to disallow me from getting press from other places.
Yeah,
it's like there's too much taking from the artist.
It's true, man. I don't know.
It's a weird thing.
It is weird. The whole like video, you guys are really killing it with the videos, but like, that's like really important to obviously like how music is done these days. And it's like, I don't know. I've never really been into like, or been like very proactive about doing videos sometimes, you know.
And honestly, Mark and I lucked out with our video, dude, because like I hate making music videos. Like it's so stressful for me,
right.
And I barely have to do anything for them, and it's still stressful as fuck. Yeah. You know what I mean? And also, there like as like lame as this sounds, like there's a lot of pressure when you're like a rap artist to like be cool and look cool right. on camera. And so it's like, fuck, it's like, dude, I'm not that fucking cool. So like, I don't like being on camera that much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'd rather they're just not, it's just all so stressful. But also we did it a weird way where like ours wasn't done. We were just releasing songs as we finished them.
Yeah.
And just to see what happened. And it seemed to work pretty good. But you know, I figured there'd be backlash by the time the album came out, and there was like only four songs that people hadn't heard before, but I was like, whatever. I'm a fan of the way that you guys put the record out, because it is an instant gratification. It's like, I saw you tweet, yo, the record's here.
Yeah.
Retweet it. And I was like, okay. And I retweeted it, and I was like, okay. And
it's funny. Yeah. Telling people to retweet it is like, really helped.
Yeah, I was like, all right, I'll retweet it. I'm a fan. I haven't heard it yet. But then I was like, it was from my phone. And then like I got home and I was like, oh yeah, I retweeted that. And I fucking went and downloaded it. And I've been listening and I like it. I thought that was smart, because there's something to be said for an immediacy.
Yeah. If and just having it all like as a artistic experience, instead of having it be like a press
junket thing.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. It might not get as much attention if we had done it another way. Like, but maybe it gets more long-term value because people consume it as one piece and they like it all the more. I don't know. I mean, it's all untested. You can't really, like, you can only experiment, but you can't really tell, like, if we had done it a different way, would it have been more
right, exactly. And that's the thing, too, is that every time you release a project, it just has to be a learning experience. And then then eventually, by the time you release your last album, hopefully you've got them all fucking combined to work together.
Yeah, I mean, it's done as good as anything else we put out as far as people downloading it and buying it.
Yeah.
It didn't get posted on the big blogs like some of our other stuff did.
Right.
But I feel like it is just a different, we used to have press people, and like, it's just funny to me the way it works is like, I know the people who have posted about us in the past, yeah, and like, I can email them, and I did email them.
Yeah.
And it's just weird to me. Like if they saw that and like, they liked the record, they still might not post it because it wasn't like done through the channels they're used to, which is just so ridiculous.
No, I feel the same way because I am friends with some of these, like, you know, quote unquote bigger bloggers. Like I keep in contact with them on a personal level, and sometimes I'll email them and I won't hear back from them. But it's like if I fucking chat them on Gmail, it's like, oh, hey, what's up, dude? How's it going? Da-da-da-da-da. But if I'm like, oh, hey, here's a new video I put out. That's the whole thing is like, man, it is a business for them. And even beyond, you know, whether or not the music is good or whether or not they like it, sometimes if it's not like fucking cool enough, or if it's not a you know, buzzy enough, or if they don't think it's going to get them enough clicks, it's like, why bother for them? You know what I mean? Which is such a crazy thing.
Yeah, it is.
It's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely is. I mean, you can see a lot of the bigger blogs have just been going downhill as far as like
quality control.
Yeah. Or just having like a good aesthetic, or just being different, or like, you know, different from whatever mainstream publication they originally started as like the solution to, or like the anti thing.
Right. Cause now everybody's just posting their, like, the press release.
Right. And it's weird that Pitchfork, you know, whatever, like I'm sure Beyonce's record is amazing and worth listening to, but I feel like, I don't know, Pitchfork, something like Pitchfork or Stereo is not maybe like, I don't know, like she gets so much help from like Rolling Stone or like whatever big MTV.
Right.
Why does Pitchfork like need to to write about her so frequently?
Yeah, totally. It's almost, there's like this kind of, there's like a backlash against the backlash. yeah. You know what I mean? So
there's,
it's
too
like
many backlashes.
Yeah, it's like all, yeah, exactly. It's like all of a sudden where it used to be cool to be the alternative, now it's like, oh, the alternative is not that cool anymore. It's fucking all the cool shit's happening in the mainstream.
It is weird. Yeah, it is. Cause people are like, In this indie scene where it's known as being like snobby, or, you know, people have this reputation of hipsters being snobby.
There you go.
And there's like, everyone's trying to go like, well, no, we're not, snobby. Not snobby. We love Beyonce.
I love Justin Timberlake.
And
you know?
As if that's like
redemption from fucking being a snob or something.
Or if that's just like avant-garde thing to do, where it's like, you know, at the end of the day, you're repping Taylor Swift and Beyonce, like the most popular artists in the world. Like that's not, there's nothing dangerous or rebellious about that if you really think about it. Only if you're looking at this bubble of like 1% of people who listen to indie music or whatever.
Totally. And it's like, even if you're doing a think piece on it, it's still like everyone else already has thought about it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's just so much space that they could be doing for like young artists.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you write? Like,
yeah, I do sometimes.
Yeah. Like, have you ever tried the music journalism thing? It seems like something you'd be pretty good at. You're very aware.
I do like writing about music. So I don't do it enough just because I'm lazy and I don't have time. But
yeah.
I don't know. I've always thinking about doing some music writing because I do love like discovering young band or like new bands.
Yeah.
And just like repping them, because it's still fun for me to just go on Bandcamp and just look through like cover art and just like see something that looks interesting. And then I don't know. That's like,
that's great that you haven't lost the like passion for finding music.
I mean, it's such a thrill. Like when you find something and you're like, this should be really popular. Like, I can't believe that I get to listen to this and nobody else like even knows about that. It is like such a weird like thrill to me.
You should start an email list or something.
I should. Yeah.
Cause I would actually subscribe to that email list, you know, that'd be helpful. Yeah. So what was the process of making this one? Was it kind of, did you, for the performance we just filmed, like you had Wyatt and Jason helping you out, but I feel like maybe the writing process was a little more personal than that. Maybe you kind of locked yourself in a room and did it.
I mean, that's how it all boils down to at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Just me and my computer.
Yeah.
In my apartment. But, you know, Jason, you know, I made the tracks, and like Jason has like a studio in his house, basically like a really janky, you know, home studio.
Yeah.
And, we just did it together kind of over the course of a year, kind of wrote the songs at the beginning and then kind of buckled down over the course of a month. And then, you know, it's funny because this is so long ago at the time that we actually did that, because we were dealing with this, like, trying to pitch it to people for so long.
How long were you guys trying to pitch it?
I don't know. We finished it, and then it was like, okay, like, time to start pitching. And then it was like months go by, and like, you know, oh, there's this lead, this freshman, and then it's 6 months old.
All these small nibbles.
And I was like, all right, well, I guess I just want to release it. Let's just
during that. This is something that I deal with being like fully independent too, is like during that part, do you lose all your other creativity?
No, I'm pretty much always writing.
That's good.
Songs constantly.
That's good.
For the last month, maybe I've like totally dedicated my like sites to like putting it out and stuff and making that happen. So I haven't been writing, and my computer broke, which is like a big blow to that.
Damn. But. Yeah. See, that's the thing, is that I find that once the record's done and I have to do the marketing part and the business part and the like production part of fucking getting the t-shirts ready and getting this ready and that ready, it's like, dude, I get so busy that I don't even think about music.
It's true. Yeah. I guess I get that way the same.
Yeah. It's a tough racket, man.
It is, man. But I don't know. I kind of luckily I enjoy that stuff in a weird way.
Same. I sometimes I wonder if I enjoy the marketing part more than the music part.
So?
Sometimes it's
definitely more of a challenge for sure, because like I don't know, writing a good song or writing a song that you're stoked on is like, you know, you can do that and that's totally in your control, but trying to figure out this game of like making this connection and all this is like a puzzle.
Totally.
It's totally frustrating, but it's a real challenge.
In the last podcast that I did with my friend James, we were talking about the same thing, about how the music is always going to be the music, but it's like this, the crazy challenging part to me now is like trying to figure out how to get the most people to hear it.
Right.
And so it's like, I'm not the type of person that will change my music to try and get more, you know, to get a wider span, but it's like, I will try to change my marketing techniques to get more people to hear the music. That is always going to be like what it is. So I don't know. Blah, 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 blah. Do you guys have like a lot of diehard fans?
Some, yeah. I mean, it's
because and why I say that is that I feel like, even though it's not, you guys' following isn't like as massive as it should be in my eyes yet, but I feel like you are the type of band that does have like a cult following, like some people that will buy anything.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah,
we have some diehards for sure.
That's tight.
And like, yeah, some weirdos. I don't know. Sometimes that shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Yes. It's weird. Cause I don't know. I don't feel like it's music that's so, I don't know, other cult artists like are, I feel like we're so accessible in lots of ways. So
yeah,
it's not something that builds a cult following as much, but I don't know. People really seem to like it sometimes.
Yeah, that's dope. How have the tours been that you've been on?
Pretty awesome. We went on like one big national tour, like probably right after we did your last podcast.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I think like the next week we like left for our big, like,
oh, no, sure,
30 city tour of the South.
And how did that go?
It went pretty well. I mean, you know, it goes, it's like some places are sick. Some places like no one comes.
Yeah.
The times you least suspect it, the shows are sick. Like, I don't know. We went to Houston. That was like the best show. Like, who knew? Like,
really?
We had tons of kids come out.
That knew you guys?
Yeah.
Like, oh, shit.
That was the first time I was just hanging out in front of the venue, and then there's like these two kids are like, oh my God, that's TV Girl.
No shit.
And I could hear it, and I was like, that's weird.
That's tight.
And yeah, this, it's like we had all our shirts and everything, and at that one show in Houston, all our merch got bought up.
Wow.
Like 30 shirts that were left, and we were like, fuck, we got to get more shirts like for the rest of the tour. That was like halfway through. We're like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
So we actually on the road like made more shirts, and then like, yeah, of course, like from then on it was like two people buy a shirt like in the show, and it was
of course.
That was just a fluke.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is about that one city.
Yeah, I love that kind of shit. It's funny. So Houston is like a fucking secret banger for you guys. Yeah.
And then we're going on a big tour, like 20 shows in July.
Yeah.
That'll be sick, playing a lot of like small towns that we never played before.
Right. When do you guys leave for the road?
We go on tour in July. Our tour starts July 9th in San Diego.
Uh-huh.
And then we end up in Denver on like the 27th.
So going all the way up California.
Up California into Canada.
Oh, into all the way up
Vancouver. We're playing one show, and then like down through Boise.
Yeah.
And Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake, playing Kilby.
Mm-hmm.
I love Kilby.
Oh, you played there before?
Yeah, I've played there a couple times. Salt Lake City is like a Houston for me for some reason. I have a little bubble right there. Yeah, actually, I have a funny story about Salt Lake City, because the first time I played there was with, I was the only white dude playing, and all, it was a similar thing where like all my merch got bought out.
Really? Who were you playing with then?
I was playing with Mike Eagle and No Can Do and Dumbfounded. I think, I don't know if Dumbfounded was at that show, but it was the three of us, and a bunch of my merch got bought out, and they didn't sell shit, and I was like, yo, Salt Lake City's racist.
That's funny, so yeah, man.
But no, Kilby Court's tight. I love that place. Yeah, and then you're doing the Southwest too?
No, maybe later. I'm trying to go to the East Coast at the end of, or in September.
Sick.
And then maybe Europe after that.
Yeah. How do you guys, rent a van, or does somebody have a van?
We have a van. We bought a van like years ago.
That's so smart, dude. I wish I would have been smart,
dude,
and bought a van.
Really? Don't do it.
Why?
I mean, if you're going to tour a lot, it's worth it, but we didn't tour a lot.
Yeah.
So I just have to pay insurance on it every month, you know?
See, that's the thing, is that I feel like...
But you don't need a van, do you? I mean, you're just one guy going around.
Kind of, but...
That was my dream, to get rid of the van once we did this new setup without drums. I'm like, finally, we can get rid of the van, but I don't know. We just kept it because it's comfortable.
Yeah. See, I would like to just think that I could get on the road and just go, but I lease my car rather than buying. Like, I lease, and so then... You only have a certain amount of miles that you can drive per month, you know?
Yeah.
Which is kind of a hindrance to touring. So either way, I would have to rent I'd have to rent something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to figure it all out, because I would like to.
I say don't buy a van. Buy my van, maybe, actually.
How much are you selling your van for? What kind of van is it?
It's like a Chevy Express 2000.
I don't know.
I might keep it around for a little while more.
Because I'm just saying, how much are you trying to get rid of it for?
Because probably $5,000, I'd give it up.
Maybe we should talk about that.
Dude, let's talk.
Yeah, shit. Is it run pretty good?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Oh, fuck, man. You might have sold me. But that would be a very life-altering purchase.
I feel bad selling a van to somebody. It's a miserable experience to own a van. Trust me. In LA, dude, I have to park it and street sweep it.
Oh, yeah.
It sucks.
I didn't think about that, because I do have to, like, move my car as is. Always 2 hours, every 2 hours every day. Like, once I stopped having a regular job, you know what I mean? Like, a regular place to be. And I'm like working out of my house. It's like, fuck, every 2 hours I have to like go outside and move my car, which was great as a cigarette smoker, because then I had an excuse to be outside every 2 hours.
Sick.
Now that I don't smoke, I have no reason. It just sucks. Anyways, blah, 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 blah. Plug your new record. Where can people find it?
Our new record's called French Exit. You can buy it on our Bandcamp, tvgirl.bandcamp.com.
It's so good. I really love it.
It's on vinyl. Those are going pretty fast. So if you want one, pick one up.
Nice.
There's t-shirts, posters, all that stuff.
At the Bandcamp page.
Yeah, you can download it for free, or you can throw us a little something.
I put down $9.99.
He put his money where his mouth is. The $9.99 iTunes special.
I tell these guys that I'm a fan, and I mean it, and I bought the record, $9.99. And yeah, that's my new shit, is I'm like trying to support people that I like. I've bought like three of my friends' records this month.
That's
and I'm
a good
like,
thing to do.
Yeah, it feels pretty tight, because I bootleg everything else, so fuck it. But yeah, go to tvgirl.bandcamp.com, download French Exit. All your other records are there too.
Yeah,
you got the
fringe.
Lonely Woman EP,
Lonely Woman
mixtape, right?
Lonely Women EP, and then The Wild Innocent, the
TV
Shuffle.
Oh, Wild Innocent, that's what it is. Dude, I get everything confused.
And then our other EPs.
Benny and the Jets
and the self-titled one.
Yeah.
And some other little goodies sprinkled in there.
All of them they live in my iTunes, and I go through them frequently. And I'm a fan, and I think you guys will be a fan too. Your Twitter is at TV Girl.
TV Girls with a Z.
That's right. TV Girls with a Z.
TV Girl was taken.
Okay. Fuck that person.
They only tweeted like three times in 2009.
Fuck you, TV Girl. Give the Twitter back. You got a Facebook that you do pretty well on too,
yeah,
right?
Hit that up.
Facebook.com/TV Girl or TV Girls?
TV Girls.
With a Z.
Yep.
Branding. That was smart.
That was smart, man.
Instagram?
Nah, not on the Insta.
Sleeping, son. It's the future. So you can't slide in those DMs if you're listening, but that's okay. On Instagram, no big deal. So if you're in the United States, look for Brad and the gang traveling, particularly if you're in Salt Lake City or fucking
in the north,
Vancouver.
Northwest. Of the United States, check it out.
They're going to be around. Go download the record. My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition. You can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. You can follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery at I Am Database, base with two S's. Follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/thatskindaneat, where you're going to see Brad, Wyatt, and Jason perform
Birds Don't Sing.
It was very beautifully done. I'm a fan, and you can see their mannequin Charlene creepily standing next to them.
She'll be on tour. Check her out.
Yeah, she'll be on
at
tour.
Charlene.
Too. I gotta say, you guys are innovators. You're the first person to bring a mannequin in to perform with you. So yeah,
but not the last, hopefully.
Hopefully not the last. Facebook.com/kindaneat and download the podcast app and search for Kinda Neat and leave a 5-star review or a 5-star rating. Comment about who you want to see on the show. Blah 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 blah.
It's beautiful. Do all this stuff.
Yeah, do all support of this. It. And while Brad sits there just looking so bored at all my fucking plugging, but I have to do it. I know no one's listening at this point. If you're missing out on listening to this part, you're going to miss the fact that I'm not saying shit. My name is Lee. This was Brad, TV girl. Right. That was kind
of
neat.
Thanks. Later.
A lot of plugs.
It is a lot of plugs. I mean...